Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls. We have with us on the line Daniel Hopsicker, and Daniel is an investigative reporter, and he, of course, put out videos. He's done an awful lot of research on an awful lot of very important things, and of course, he's written a book on Barry Seal, and it's a fascinating book. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. We actually carry the book. But we also wanted to talk a little bit about who trained the hijackers. And I know that Daniel went actually down to Florida and went to Huffman Aviation, where Muhammad Atta had trained, talked to the people who were working there at Huffman Aviation, where so many of the hijackers actually trained. Daniel, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Hey, Dr. Stan, my pleasure. How you doing?
Fine. Well, why don't you tell us what you found when you checked out Huffman Aviation? What about this one fellow who worked there who had quit, and just a couple of hours after 9/11, the FBI was at his door? How did they even know who was on the plane at that time?
Well, there's a pretty good question. There's a very good question. How did they know to be there? No, the specific story I think you're referencing was an operations manager at Huffman, and also at the airline, the bogus airline that they used for purposes that are still unknown. And an FBI white van was outside his house less than 4 hours after the attack.
Well, now, how could that possibly be? Because the FBI had no idea who the hijackers were. They had no idea the attack was coming. And yet, you mean, within 4 hours after the attack, they'd already tracked that man down?
Well, I'm gonna give you one indisputable fact.
All right, fine.
About 9/11.
All right.
And then I'm going to invite you to come to your own conclusion. I'm happy to come to mine, but let me give you the fact first. During the same month that Muhammad Atta arrived, and Marwan al-Shehhi arrived to attend his flight school, July of 2000, the owner of the flight school had his Learjet confiscated on the runway of Orlando Executive Airport by DEA agents with submachine guns, who found 43 pounds of heroin.
All right, fine. Well, then what happened to the man, and what happened to the Learjet?
Well, he lost the Learjet. If you're an innocent owner that's chartered a plane to someone who uses it for a criminal purpose, you get your plane back.
All right. So what you're suggesting is that the man who was running Huffman Aviation was smuggling
back. Wallace J. Hilliard is his name, from Green Bay, Wisconsin, of all places. A local business tycoon from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And so what is he doing running a flight school in Florida?
That's an unanswered question. I mean, that there was never an explanation offered for who these people were that ran the flight school, or why the terrorists attended there, flocked there.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Daniel Hopsicker, who's written a relatively fascinating book, Barry and the Boys. And then, of course, we're going to talk a little bit more about Huffman Aviation. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Daniel Hopsicker, who's an investigative reporter, and he's written a book which we carry. called Barry and the Boys. But and of course, you look at the picture on the front of that, and you see all of these CIA agents who were there with Barry Seal, who is a drug smuggler working for the CIA, and who's sitting there but a man named Goss. Isn't he the new director of the CIA?
You found that out. You read that, huh?
Right.
Well, good for you, Dr. Stan. Yeah, is that amazing?
It really is. I mean, here is the present director of the CIA. This picture must be taken, what, 30 years ago?
Correct. 1961.
40 years.
January 22nd, 1961. Excuse me, 63.
All right.
Exactly 10 months to the day before the Kennedy assassination. And I found the picture while writing Barry and the Boys. I say I found the picture. I was, it came from way beyond me. I didn't find the picture. The State Department had sent down a 7-person detail in 1995 to go through Debbie Seal, Barry Seal's widow. Barry Seal was assassinated in 1986, to go through her records, his records, really, and comb through them, and one would suspect pull out anything incriminating. At that point, a couple of books had already been written about Barry Seal, including Partners in Power and Compromised. And it was threatening Bill Clinton's reelection, and so it was sensitive. But they didn't look in her safe, because all she keeps in her safe, or kept in her safe at that time, was some keepsakes. You know, gifts he had given her, jewels, blah, 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 blah. And one of the keepsakes he had given her was a picture in a nightclub framed photograph, okay? But just like you get in a nightclub, you can still get them today, apparently. I mean, I don't know. Or if you go to Disneyland, they do it. A picture taken in a Mexico City nightclub of Barry Seal with 9 other guys. And the date on the picture is January 21st, 1963, exactly 10 months to the day before the Kennedy assassination.
And were most of these people CIA?
They were members of the CIA's most super secret operation, known as Operation 40. They were a group of killers. In fact, that was their job.
And Barry Seal was right along.
Barry Seal was one of. Well, Barry would have been the pilot flying him in and extracting him out.
All right, fine. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and with us today is really one of the most courageous investigative reporters we have in America today. His name is Daniel Hopsicker, and if you haven't read his book, Barry and the Boys, you need to. We do carry the book. And, of course, he goes into the background of America's most famous drug smuggler, who had a very good friend who was working with government. His name was George Herbert Walker Bush, and it was George Herbert Walker Bush who seemed to have protected him a lot of times. And then, of course, somewhere along the line, Barry crossed over the line and was set up to be assassinated. Do we have any idea who assassinated him? Was it really the drug smugglers, or was it some sort of a contract hit because he knew too much?
Well, testimony at the trial of the people that were convicted of assassinating him showed that they were Colombian hitmen or a drug cartel down there. But they weren't working for the Medellin cartel, which is the story, because Barry worked for the Medellin cartel. So he was assassinated on orders of Jorge Ochoa. They worked for the Cali cartel. And while they were in the U.S., according to court testimony, they were being directed by an anonymous United States military officer, whom they very quickly figured out was Oliver North.
An American military officer was directing these people?
Correct.
All right. Well, there's so many incredible stories out there. But let Chris and ask Daniel to come on to tell us a little bit about Hoffman Aviation. And he goes to these places. He talks to the people. He made a wonderful video about Hoffman Aviation. And this is where so many of the hijackers went to learn how to fly. How many of them were down there at Hoffman? Do we have any idea?
Dozens of terrorists, of suspected terrorists, learned to fly at Hoffman Aviation.
All right, fine. And among them, of course, was Muhammad Atta.
Correct. And Marwan al-Shahi, his bodyguard.
And of course, the question is, why did he go there? I mean, we know that he went to Norman, Oklahoma, looked at that facility, and then he decided not to go to Norman to learn or to improve his flying skills. Was he already a trained pilot, or was he really learning to fly there? Or is this some sort of a cover story?
Well, first of all, if you look at the history of the flight school in Norman, Oklahoma that he went to, you will discover that numerous terrorists have learned to fly there, including Osama bin Laden's personal pilot and somebody who was convicted as part of for the World Trade Center bombing in 1993. So there had already been a cluster of terrorists that had gone to this flight school in Norman, Oklahoma, and nobody knows why they went there and then turned away. But you know, one might suspect that they had received too much scrutiny as a result of what they'd already done. I don't know. I don't know what the story is. They didn't get the deal they wanted there. That certainly crossed my mind. Maybe they didn't get the deal that they wanted there, because clearly what was going on was somebody associated with the flight school was involved in the massive importation of narcotics into the United States. And clearly, those narcotics, or a good portion of those narcotics, would have arrived under the aegis of Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden ran Afghanistan, is what the government has told us. Afghanistan, the government told us, at the time of the 2001 attack, produced over 60% of the world's heroin. So if you are the world's heroin king, and that's what Osama bin Laden was, are you going to want to sell your product into the world's richest market? I suspect you will. And I suspect that that's where 43 pounds of heroin is an enormous amount of heroin.
And for our listeners now who just come on board with us, apparently 43 pounds of heroin were found on a jet that was at the airport base where the Huffman Aviation was, and the jet was owned by the manager of Huffman Aviation. Did he ever go to prison over that?
No, he was never even charged, but they took away his plane, and the DA didn't give him back to him. And the circumstances of the situation are such that it could be said conclusively that he had to have been aware of it. That plane had flown 30 weekly trips to Venezuela and back before it got busted. I think it got busted by mistake, actually. 30 weekly trips, ferrying the same two Latin men who paid cash for each flight. Okay? You can talk to flight school owners and charter jet operators in your neck of the woods. You can talk to them here. And nobody is going to do that, because they know what's going on, and they know what's going to happen. They're going to lose their planes. Okay? Nobody does that. I mean, that's you don't fly Latin men for cash.
Well, what you're really suggesting then is maybe there was some CIA tie into this whole Huffman Aviation, not only for as far as drugs, but also it seems that all of these Islamic terrorists training to crash planes into American buildings are going to this same aviation school?
Mm-hmm. What we're looking at, clearly, see, I mean, one would say, okay, the CIA is running drugs, but who knows if it's the CIA? What if it's the FBI? What if it's the DIA? Okay? What if it's the NSA? The National Security Agency is 10 times larger than the CIA, at least that's what they say, but I have no way of knowing that. What it was, I can state, was a protected drug trafficking activity. And when I say protected, I mean it had protection at the local, state and federal government level. There was nobody going to bust these people moving in and out. They finally got busted in Orlando, but it was by mistake when a low level drug dealer there got caught and offered to take them to the plane where he picked up his drugs. And these are low level DEA, just regular guys. You'll always find that the higher you get in a hierarchy like the FBI, the more corrupt the individual generally is. And I'm sure it's the same way in the DEA. So these guys, they're making busts. That's what they do. They didn't know that the plane was protected. They didn't know, for example, that the pilot, that the day job of the pilot was as chief pilot for Venezuela's Air Force One.
All right, fine. So let's go ahead then, and let's get into what the terrorists were doing. They were training, of course, to learn how to fly airplanes with the idea of crashing them into our buildings.
No, well, who knows why they were here? Well, no, clearly, well, I mean, if during the same month ATA arrives, the owner's plane gets busted with 43 pounds of heroin, okay, any prosecuting attorney in the country is going to make the inference I'm about to make, which is that there was a cause-and-effect relationship there between the heroin and ATA's appearance at the flight school. That's what I want to get across to you here.
All right. So you think there was a relationship, but what was it? Was Muhammad Atta certainly wasn't involved in drugs, was he? Or was he?
Oh, of course he was. I mean, of course he was. He did cocaine regularly. He drank almost every night.
All right. So you've actually...
He lived with a pink-haired American stripper for 2 months.
Okay. So you've actually checked this whole story out, I know, because you were down there. You spent time there.
I'm still here, Dr. Stan. When you opened the show by saying you were looking out over Monterey Bay, I thought, my God, I was really envying you, okay? I'm not an armchair investigator out here, okay? I'm from California. I love California. I'd like to be in California right now. Florida's the most corrupt state in the union, and I don't think I'll ever get out of here, you know, because the scandals are run through here.
All right, fine.
I mean, this current scandal involving Jack Abramoff and Tom DeLay, the House Republican leader, the lobbying scandal, that happened right here on casino boats. There was a casino boat right here in Venice, Florida, operating in a completely unregulated fashion, and they still are.
All right, but anyway, of course, then Muhammad Atta is there. He's drinking, he's doing drugs, he's living with a stripper. That's hardly what you would expect from a fanatical Muslim who's ready to give his life for Allah.
And he was on a casino boat owned by Jack Abramoff less than a week before September 11th.
This is, you're speaking now of Muhammad Atta.
Correct.
Well, you know, the most amazing thing is, Daniel, we know that he was being followed by American intelligence when he was in Germany, and he was being followed by German intelligence when he was in Germany, and he's being followed by Spanish intelligence when he's in Spain, but right. We're told when he returns to the United States, why our intelligence has no interest in him at all.
If there's two of them living in a home owned by an FBI confidential informant in San Diego, okay, you got to figure that the activity they're involved in is one that's making somebody here money. Their presence here was tolerated because they were making somebody here alive today in the United States of America a lot of money. That's what I'm on about.
All right. Well, you know, one of the most amazing things is the story.
There is someone here whose feet we could put to the fire, if only there were some honest journalists in this country.
Well, you know,
first of all, I want you to tell you, a lot of this stuff is on my website, madcowprod.com. I know a lot of your listeners know about it already.
Well, no, let's give them that website one more time.
The Mad Cow Morning News is where we put this stuff up, and it's at madcowprod.com. I got interviewed again. Speaking of journalists, there are no investigative journalists today, and why? I found out why.
Why?
I was interviewed this week and last week by the local newspaper, the Sarasota Herald Tribune. I'm a local author. They're going to do a local my book. Welcome to Terrorland is the best selling book at the Venice Bookshop of all time.
Welcome to Terrorism, huh?
Welcome to Terrorland is the best-selling book at the local Venice Bookshop of all time.
All right. Is that available from Chris Milliken, or whereabouts?
Yeah, you can get it right off our website.
Okay, I mean, we can pull the whole book down?
No, you can get a chapter of it, and you can order the book.
Or you can
get it in bookstores. It's in bookstores now.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Daniel.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991. It tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine. But those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Huh? Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Daniel Hopsicker, and we carry his book, Barry and the Boys. And, of course, we're talking to him about his investigation that he has taking place down there in Venice, Florida at the present time. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your book, Welcome to Terrorland? We may very well go ahead and carry that as well.
Well, you should, probably, Dr. Stan. I've spent 2 years down here investigating and talking. It's a murder investigation. It's a homicide investigation.
You're talking now about, of course, 911.
Of course I am. And the first thing any homicide investigator or any reporter that's writing about a murder does is what? Interview the friends, the relatives, and the neighbors of the perps, or the suspected perps in this case. And that's what I did. And I was alone doing it. I consider that I've been more or less behind enemy lines for about 3 years now. And I've learned quite a lot about September 11th from what I saw and heard here. For example, here's one, just one. It took me 6 months, but I tracked down the American girl that Muhammad Atta had lived with for 2 months. And by the by, during our interview, she said something as if she were him. She mimicked his accent, and it was not an accent I'd ever heard before. It wasn't. It just wasn't. It sounded a little British inflected, but it wasn't. I had never heard that particular accent until I was in Washington, D.C. on the last day of the 9/11 Commission hearings, when they finally played the tape of Muhammad Atta in the cockpit telling people, we have some planes, you know. And that was exactly the accent when he spoke. I instantly knew that was him, because that was the accent that Amanda Keller had mimicked.
And what is the significance of the accent? Is it an Arab accent? Is it
I guess it's Arab-inflected English. There's no significance to the accent. What's significant is that just because, while talking about something else, she mimicked his accent, and I took it down, videotaped it and wrote it down, that when I heard it later, I knew it was him flying the plane.
Sure. Well, now, what basically did you learn from talking to Amanda?
That he was not an Islamic fundamentalist, unless Islamic fundamentalists do cocaine, or drink, or live with strippers. So he couldn't have been an Islamic fundamentalist. What he is, then, is up for grabs. He's not an Islamic fundamentalist. What is he? And I learned that from her. I learned from her story, actually. I learned that he was a psychopath, a full-bore, flat-out psychopath. When she kicked him out of their apartment across the street from the Venice airport, he said, "I will come back and I will get you." That's kind of the accent she used with, yeah. And a week later, when she got home from work, she was a lingerie model, a stripper at the time. She got home in the morning about 7 a.m., and she had a dog and a cat, and the cat had just had a litter of kittens. So she comes back at 7 in the morning, she opens the door, there's no little kitten noises, she turns on the light, and there are kitten parts strewn all over the apartment. And her mother cat has been gutted on the kitchen table. And what kind of a person can do something like that? Dr. Stan? We're talking about somebody who has been programmatically desensitized. I mean, this is not my area, as they say, but somebody that can do something like that generally has undergone some sort of mind control.
Well, of course, did she feel that he was getting money, large sums of money, from somebody?
Oh, they always walked around with a fat roll. He had a roll. He carried a fanny pack. Always had a fanny pack, and always had a fat roll of money in the fanny pack. They all did. They were spending money like it was water.
Do we have any idea where the money was coming from? We've heard stories about a general with the General Ahmed over there in Pakistani intelligence who was funding this whole thing. Have you heard those stories?
Sure.
Do you think they're true?
I have no reason to doubt that they're not true, but I have no personal knowledge of it either. I mean, I'm telling you stuff I discovered for myself by knocking on doors.
All right, fine. Well, when we get back, I hope you'll tell us a little bit more about what you found, you know, there in your investigation. Because had the FBI actually talked to this woman?
Oh yeah. And then they visited her. They intimidated her into keeping her mouth shut.
Why wouldn't they want her to tell the truth? We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Our four-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Daniel Hopsicker, and the great tragedy is, apparently, everything has been done to conceal the truth about so much of what happened surrounding the 911 attack. I know from talking to manager of the Norman Flight School in Oklahoma, the Airman Flight School in Norman, Oklahoma, that the FBI was down there checking on Masui, who was the so-called 20th hijacker, 10 days before the attack. Now, we're told the FBI had no idea, they wouldn't look into him at all, and they're simply lying to the American people. I was told that within 2 days of the attack, why the FBI was back again at Norman asking about Muhammad Atta having been there. And the manager of the flight school didn't even remember him, but the FBI knew everything about Muhammad Atta just a couple of days after the attack. And so why would they not tell the American people the truth unless they are specifically covering up something? Now, why were they trying to intimidate this woman to keep her from talking? What did she know that they didn't want the American people to know, do you think, Daniel?
Well, I do know. How I know this for a certainty, I believe, is because my conclusions and what I found, the evidence I found here, has been independently corroborated from an entirely different source that I don't even know. An FBI translator, whistleblower in Washington, D.C. named Sybil Edmonds.
All right.
Has come forward and said she translated documents in 2002. That indicated that the State Department was covering up for a drug smuggling network close to the hijackers. And that's what I found. How about that? I mean, how about that? So what was going on was somebody able to move the power or the levers of power in the U.S. government was doing business with Osama bin Laden on September 10th, 2001.
Well, there's so many unanswered questions. Nobody's ever asked why so many high government officials canceled their flights for the 11th of December on the 10th of December. We know that. It appeared twice in Newsweek magazine. And nobody's ever asked which of these government officials might have met General Mahmoud Mahmoud or whatever, Ahmed, General Ahmed. You know, he was in Washington, D.C. on the very day of 9/11, and yet he had been funneling money to Muhammad Atta. So there's something wrong with the entire story. We are not being told the truth because, of course, Pakistani intelligence was simply an extension of the CIA.
Well, I don't know that.
All right,
okay?
Fine.
One of two things is the case, okay? And I can tell you what happened September 11th, okay? Here's what happened on here's the true story of the September 11th attack. Something happened, and then something else happened, and then September 11th happened.
All right.
Okay? September 11th was a response to a ongoing negotiation, which independent sources have all said what's going on at the time.
All right. Who was the investigation or the negotiation with?
It was between the U.S. government and the Taliban.
All right, fine. And of course, we were trying to get them to agree to allow us to put a pipeline across Afghanistan, and they didn't want to do it.
Correct.
Is that
and there were ongoing negotiations, and negotiations apparently were not going well. Because it has since come out that the U.S. had begun infiltrating special forces troops into Afghanistan in the summer of 2001. So we were already, in effect, at war with those people over there.
All right, so there were negotiations going on. So we wanted to build the pipeline. The Taliban wouldn't. We've certainly had read from very reliable sources that American officials told the representatives of Pakistan that either the Taliban, you know, allowed us to pave their streets with gold or we would pave their streets with carpet bombs. And so, well, they were pretty outlandish people. They just didn't understand how the game was played.
Well, that September 11th was their response.
Right.
You know, that looks to me like the story of what happened. The other alternative would be, you know, because we were doing business with them and in some such close contact that, you know, someone in the U.S. picked up the phone and called Osama bin Laden and said, there's an extra $5 billion in it for you if you have somebody attack us, you know, in the next 3 months. And I don't think that's the case. I don't operate on those levels, and I have no insight. I mean, but there's the theory of before I'm going to believe that there were people here who sponsored an attack on ourselves. I mean, it's not without precedent, but before I believe that, I need to see proof. Okay, and what I see looks to me like a double cross. Okay,
who was double crossing who then?
Well, I can figure it out. I mean, Dr. Stan, if I own a candy store and you that you pass every day on your way to school, okay, and you come into my candy store every day for the whole year and buy some candy, and on the last day of school you come in and you're in third grade and you pull out a revolver and you say, you know, give me all the cash in the drawer and the other place where I've seen you put it, you know, and keep your mouth shut, what's happened? You've been double-crossed. You know, I was a customer. You were a customer. I've been double-crossed, okay? The nature of the transaction changes. And that's what it looks like to me. It was a double-cross. We got double-crossed by people that somebody here was doing business with.
Somebody here, but you're saying it wasn't you and I were double-crossed.
No.
You think that somebody wanted this as a justification for an attack on Afghanistan and then maybe an attack on Iraq? Is this what you're suggesting, or is this just simply a theory?
Well, you see, I don't know is what I'm saying.
Okay.
I mean, I have no personal knowledge of the ultimate truth of September 11th. But what I do know, because I discovered it, is that the essential part of the government's story about what happened is a lie.
All right.
And that story, the essential line, is that 19 hijackers slipped through Europe and America unnoticed.
And you think that they were noticed? You think they were being monitored?
I know they were noticed.
How do you know that? That's the thing.
There's an FBI van outside somebody at Huffman Aviation's house 4 hours after the attack. They knew Mohammed Atta was there.
Sure. And I'm sure that...
And why did they know he was there? Because he was a part of something. And he was a part of something that allowed him privileges, like walking away from a plane on the runway of Miami Airport, like he did, without suffering any sanction at all.
Now, I'm sorry. Now, was he in any way associated with this jet that you're speaking out of? What plane did he walk away from?
It's a famous incident, or should be. He was on a flight in a plane from Huffman Aviation, and it flew over to Miami, and he landed at Miami International Airport, and the plane stalled on the taxiway. You know, like the highway, basically. And rather than attempt to get it started again, he and his companion got out of the plane and left it there.
Well, you don't do that.
If that was you or me, the FBI, not the FBI, the FAA, would have taken our pilot's licenses away without blinking.
So you're suggesting that there was perhaps some force behind Mohammed Atta?
Correct. The full force and power of the U.S. government, or of somebody able to manipulate the U.S. government. Okay. Because the drug smuggling activity that he was clearly a part of didn't profit me or you. It profited somebody here, though.
All right. Now, of course, you talked to the woman that he had lived with for a couple of months, and she felt, did she feel he was a psychopath?
Well, not until she came home a week. I mean, you know, she's just a kid, and she was just a kid doing drugs at that point, you know? But if you're living with someone, you kick him out. And you throw his clothes over the balcony railing down onto the parking lot below, okay? And you might expect that, you know, if you saw him in a bar, he'd come over, you know, and be mean to you or something, you know? But you don't expect that a week later you're going to come home and find kitten parts all over your apartment, little pieces of baby kittens that have been dismembered. That's a little out of the ordinary, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a lot of very strange things about these very, very strange people. The thing that has always intrigued me was the story of the passports. Somebody planted the passports. There's no way that two passports got out of the pockets of two hijackers and got out of the flaming infernos and escaped being destroyed. One in New York, not even a little bit of smoke on it, as far as we can tell, certainly not singed at all,
right,
and found on the street, and the other one found, although partially burned, in Pennsylvania. But they were both four people, we are told, that the government says were in the planes. Now, either this was the most miraculous thing of all time, or somebody knew who was going to be on those planes and made the passports up ahead of time and then planted them at the site. That's the only two alternatives.
Well, they didn't have to actually plant passports. All they had to do was say they found passports.
Right. Well, actually,
right?
Of course, they...
So they didn't have to go to the trouble of actually making up and then charring a passport.
Well, actually, they had this one, at least the picture of it, up on the...
Well, they did.
The FBI website.
You know, I mean, think about it. If they knew it was Atta, if they had it right away, and so, within 4 hours, they're all over Huffman Aviation down in Venice, and a reporter comes along and says, well, how did you know? What were you doing there? You know, why were you so sure? Well, we got the passport. I mean, that's they were building a case, clearly.
All right. Well, let's go to Jeff, who's calling us from Massachusetts. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine, sir. How's it going with you?
Oh, doing fine. How is it there in the enemy territory?
Oh, I'm surviving.
All right, fine. Did you have a question or comment for our guest?
Oh, yes. My comment is this, and this is something to really think about, which is Pat Buchanan said this, which is, in essence, most of the hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. And Pat Buchanan made a very good point when he said that, which is pointing out the obvious, which is, why aren't we in Saudi Arabia? Why are we in Iraq? Which is a very obvious question. Why is Bush holding hands with the Prince of Saudi Arabia, for crying out loud?
That's a very, very good question. All right. Anything else you want to say, Jeff?
Yes. It just seems like it's very fishy, and it seems like Bush is almost a traitor that should be impeached because he left the borders open. And illegally, not for that.
I mean, for something else. I mean, in fact, what you just said, which sounds wackier than hell, that Bush could have been a traitor, was actually written about in a book by the guy who was in charge of the investigation. I have never seen a book be ignored, except for mine, like the book that was written by Bob Graham, the senator who was in, was the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Investigation into 9/11.
Do you remember the title of the book?
See, I can't even do that. I mean, you know, I mean, I read the book, but I can't even remember the title of it. It was today, gone tomorrow. But in the book, he openly talks about the number of things that Bush has done, you know, and clearly the Saudis are involved here. Clearly, 15 of the hijackers were Saudi.
Yes,
and yet, well, we didn't go out. We didn't invade Saudi Arabia, did we?
No, we went to war with Iraq. This was planned long beforehand. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Jeff.
No problem, sir, and have a very enjoyable night.
Bye bye. Okay, fine. Well, I certainly share your concern, and I remember when Senator Graham wrote that book. And really, I should really get that and read it, because I'm sure he had an opportunity to really go over all the intelligence material. What they've done is they've given us so much material. They've overloaded us with conflicting material, I think, intentionally to confuse us. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, let's talk it out. What everyone can agree on is that pretty much right after September 11th, the government clamped down on information, and a cover-up ensued. And a cover-up of what is certainly at issue, but I think most people can agree that there was and is a massive cover-up. Something pretty horrible, obviously, was kept from getting to the American people. Now, put yourself in charge of the cover-up. Your Karl Rove, for example. 1 week, 2 weeks after September 11th, you can sit there and smile a little bit and go, well, I got the major media handled. What do you got to worry about? You got to worry about the internet. You got to worry about informed speculation. And how did they deal with the problem? They flooded the internet with disinformation. They flooded it. They must have had 1,000 people working on it. They flooded it, and they arranged the opposition that they were going to get. More than half of I would think the publicity around the movement to look into it accrued to a guy by the name of Mike Rupert. What did he come up with 9/11? What did you learn from him? Not a thing. Nothing.
All right. Well, you think that there's, and I agree with you, there's been a lot of false information put up. Put up the straw man. We debated the wrong issues. And when you talk about the wrong issues, you're going to come up with the wrong conclusions. And really, it is so amazing that they're able to manipulate the reality of the American people as effectively as they do. And they get people fighting back and forth between themselves, you know, but never addressing what the real issues are.
Yeah, they are masters and masterful at what they do.
All right.
And they have kept the real issues from being addressed.
Well, now,
the real issues being, who were these people? Why were they here? What were they doing? Who were they associating with? How come the owner of the flight school that they went to, you know, was involved with, you know, top Republicans and top Democrats? How come, you know, they picked a flight school that had, you know, unique in the country guy like that? They know that, you know, that's what should have come out. How come the guy running the flight school, Rudy Dekkers, Dutch guy on TV, all over TV in the first week afterward. How come we didn't find out that this guy's an international criminal wanted in his native Holland?
Now, who is this fellow you're speaking of now,
Dan? Reed Eckers, the Dutch guy that ran the flight school.
I see. So he's an international criminal. He's wanted in his own country.
He was wanted at the time of September 11th in his native Holland.
And has he ever been deported to Holland, or does he seem to have somebody protecting him here?
Dr. Stan, you speak so calmly about it, you know? Yeah, of course he's got protection. Of course he does.
All right.
I mean, otherwise he'd have been under the bright lights of law a lot sooner than now.
Well, of course, sometimes when you've got friends highly placed in government, why you do very well for a time, and then, like Barry Seal, why you're set up for assassination, and somebody's guiding, some military man's guiding the assassins. Hey, thanks so much, Daniel. We're out of time. God bless. Great to have you with us.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. The only thing we have by Daniel Hopsiger is an excellent book entitled Barry and the Boys. It's a story of America's most famous drug smuggler, Barry Seal, who worked with the CIA. At least all the evidence suggested he did. He made $1 billion, but of course he was one of the richest men in the graveyard. They were set up for an assassination. He knew too much. He had worked very closely with some of the most highly placed people in our government. Barry and the Boys, fascinating insight into the drug smuggling that goes on here in America, and it could only exist, of course, with full support from some people in very high places. We have a book called Drugging America, going into the background, interviews with people who worked for the CIA and the DEA and the FBI about how our government was actually encouraging this, at least the dark side of our government. The book, of course, Defrauding America, that's Drugging America, Defrauding America. We have a four-tape set. Is there really a war on drugs? And there you'll actually hear six different interviews where we talk about various agencies of our government involved in drug smuggling. Have you ever noticed we have a war on drugs and we get more drugs? We have a war on cancer and we get more cancer? We have a war on terrorism and we get more terrorism. Of course, it's all overseas. None of us here in the United States. But, of course, we're told, oh, we've got to fight those terrorists on the streets of Baghdad rather than here in the United States. Our government has a very efficient intelligence organization. It knows where all the terrorists are, and if it can't find any, it'll set up sting operations, even tracking some poor little Arab girl into a chat room to see who she was listening to. And believe me, they're monitoring everything you do. They're monitoring every one of your telephone calls, every one of your faxes, every one of your emails. It's all done by computer, by echelon. Of course, the British are doing that, and then, of course, we're doing the same thing with Great Britain and all throughout Europe. We live in a surveillance society, and the average American has no idea what's really going on. Again, we have a wonderful book. It's called Into the Buzzsaw. There you'll read the essay by Gary Webb, who gave his life for his country. He was a Pulitzer-winning writer for the San Jose Mercury, who wrote a series of articles about the CIA involvement with drug smuggling. Pressure was put on the San Jose Mercury and to make his life difficult and impossible for him. And then pressure was put on newspapers across the country to keep him from being able to get a job anywhere in the United States. As an example of what happens to you if you dare to tell the truth as a reporter, which is why we have so little investigative reporting today. So Pulitzer Prize winner Gary Webb recently committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice. Not once, but twice. Oh, he was really determined to commit suicide. But you can get his essay, so important, part of his legacy. The book is Into the Buzzsaw. This and so much more is available from Radio Liberty. But just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Barry and the Boys, the tape set, Is There a War on Drugs? The book, Drugging America, Defrauding America, and then, of course, the book Into the Buzzsaw. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a copy of our latest newsletter, which goes into the Luciferian movement in America, it's entitled The Occult Hierarchy, Part 1. We'll be glad to send you a free copy of our May newsletter. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are Luciferian organizations here. And when you understand that, then so much of what goes on makes sense, because otherwise nothing is really making sense. We live almost in a world gone mad. So again, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, 1-800-544-8927, please go to our website, radioliberty.com. We hope many of you will support Radio Liberty by joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this spiritual battle for the survival of souls, the survival of Western civilization. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.